When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, so here we are. Here we are, days away from spring training being over, days away from the beginning of one of the most exciting seasons, one of the most anticipated, most looked forward to, hyphenated, seasons in recent Phillies memory, if not longer. And lo and behold, all of the good injury luck, all of the good vibes, all of the good karma that had accrued over the first few weeks of spring training, all of a sudden that tab came due on Thursday when, in case you didn't hear, Phillies first baseman Rhys Hoskins tore the ACL in his left knee, fielding a ground ball, a chopper ground ball to deep in the hole behind first base. He had to pivot. He had moved awkwardly, planted his leg a little bit weird. Non-contact injury, went down in a heap. Poof. There goes your stalwart first baseman. Now, there are divided opinions on Rhys Hoskins for reasons, I guess. But what you can't deny is this. The guy's a good baseball player. You may think down on him for being a little bit less of a defender. You may think down on him for being a little bit streaky of a hitter. Point is this, folks, you don't easily replace somebody like Rhys Hoskins. Moreover, the personal aspect of this, as Rhys was entering his walk year when he was set to test the free agent waters, and if he had another typical year, even if it was the last couple of years when he wasn't getting on base quite as much as he used to, he stood to make a comfortable eight-figure salary, 20, 30 million, who knows what it would have looked like. He would have made good money from somebody, from somewhere, even if it wasn't Philadelphia. Now all of that is gone. He will make $12 million this year, but his future beyond this year, location, contract terms, all of that is up in the air. And in the near term, the Phillies now have a first base problem, puzzle, something of the sort to figure out. And we need to work through some of that because now more than ever, the title of this podcast, Phillies Therapy, is very appropriate because I feel like we got to work through some stuff. Joining me as always, The Athletic's Matt Gelb, who is back home from Florida just in time for this rather terrible, but blessedly terrible event to drop and for the start of the season to all of a sudden be tossed into complete chaos. Matt, what's the feeling that folks are having, both Rhys and other people in the clubhouse in the wake of this? Has everybody gotten over the shock yet, or is it still just something that's kind of hanging in the air right now?
The first thing, there's a couple things I thought of first, Paul. One of the things I thought of was a conversation I had with Bobby Dickerson a couple weeks ago. I was asking about, kind of the work they were doing with Hoskins at first base, and obviously, it was never going to be perfect. It wasn't ever going to even be above average or even average, probably. But he said we got off topic, and I went back and found it. I just found it now, and we were, we were just talking about the dynamic of Rhys Hoskins, and this is what he said to me. I'll quote Bobby Dickerson. He says, "I'll tell you this: if you go out there and you go throughout the league, there's 30 first basemen, and you keep going on and digging, and before you know it, you can find a lot of pimples on all those guys. And then you'll get a guy here and you'll be like, damn, we miss Rhys." And that wasn't supposed to be something they were going to experience until next year. I mean, it's going to end up being, they're going to learn what life without Rhys Hoskins is like here in 2023. And it's just such a jarring thing to happen, I think, because it's so hard to imagine the 2023 Phillies without Hoskins being a part of it. And there's a lot of cruel ironies here. You know, I mean, Rhys Hoskins has been on this franchise longer than any position player, than any hitter in the organization. And this is the best team that's ever been assembled around him. You know, think about all those bad teams that he was on. And
yeah,
this was the best Phillies team he was going to play for. And now he will not be playing for that team. And that's really rough. You know, I use this in my story. I mean, I wrote a little, what I dubbed as like kind of an ode or appreciation to, you know, for Rhys Hoskins, because I do think that, you know, before we get into all the, you know, what happens with the roster, you know, how do they replace him? What do they do?
Sure.
Like, I think it's important to like pause and take a minute and, you know, because for all we know, like that was it. Like, he will not play for the Phillies again. You know, he's a free agent, as you mentioned, and who knows what happens, but, you know, it's just so hard to imagine this team without him. And I think that's kind of how people are processing. It's going to take a little bit. And, you know, the season starts in less than a week. So obviously, like, you know, people have to get over it. But it's crazy to me how this all went down. And he really is a tragic figure, I think, in this franchise, because he's a good, not great player who was, you know, sort of expected to be great from the very beginning. And unfairly, I think it's just the way everything happened. And they're going to miss him. And I'm really curious to see how they decide to fill this, but they're really going to miss Rhys Hoskins. And I think he deserved better.
Yeah. You know, it is disappointing that it is sort of this tragic figure ending. You know, you never want somebody who was there for the worst of the Phillies experience, you know, dating back into the pre-Harper era and even into the early Harper era, to have somebody come out on the other side and emerge and have these, you know, a couple of triumphant moments in the playoffs. Like, I wanted him to get a chance at a little bit more. I wanted him to have an opportunity to keep experiencing that, because it felt like it was due to him for what he was part of, you know, before this team got good. And I think it's a great point that you made that, you know, when you're bringing up what Bobby Dickerson was saying, like, we're going to miss Rhys. I think that's going to be apparent pretty quickly. At the very least, it's going to be obvious that this team is going to have to do a little bit of a patchwork thing at first base. They're going to have to make some kind of configuration work. It still seems like they're not going to expose Derek Hall too much to lefties. Then what does that mean? Who slides over? Is it Alec Bohm? Is Edmundo Sosa going to play a little bit more? What happens? Do they make a trade? Does somebody else make the team on opening day? Blah, blah, blah. We'll get into some of that in a second. I think about the stabilizing force that this guy had. You know, you mentioned in the clubhouse, he's, you know, pretty close to revered. Everybody really seems to love Rhys in there. But on the field too, I think it gets lost just how much this guy has contributed and was expected to contribute in the middle of this lineup. I mean, this is a guy who's among, you know, the top 50 in this franchise's history in things like slugging percentage and OPS and extra base hits and home runs and RBIs, you know, OPS plus, win probability added. You know, you can find a lot of things that are positive, just objectively positive, that this guy has contributed. And now we don't get to see him take that farewell tour. I guess that it was sort of expected that he would leave after this year.
I mean, less about the farewell tour and more about, like you said, about, you know, accumulating more of those moments. And like,
yeah,
I think like it's awesome that he got to the other side, right?
Yeah.
It's awesome that he did, because like he got to have numerous moments in the postseason last year, the bat spike chief among them, but
yeah,
the two homers in the NLCS game four. Am I getting that right?
Yes.
I don't even remember. Game yep. four, right? The crazy, the wild game, faltered, mm-hmm. didn't yep. get out of the, both pitchers didn't get out of the first. He had these moments, and like, you know, a lot of guys pass through here. A lot of Rhys's teammates pass through here. Good players too. Some of them, not a lot of them, some of them, and they didn't get those moments.
No, right? They didn't. You know, Cesar Hernandez didn't get his chance. Michael Franco didn't get his chance. You know, there are guys who were organizational soldiers who didn't get the opportunity. And I'm glad Reese capitalized as much as he did. All right, look, it's a bummer, but the team does have to move on and try to find a way to move on relatively quickly, right? The start of the season is on the doorstep. This is something that can't really wait. And so there's a chance now, we think, potentially, for the Phillies to make some kind of move. Whether they continue to look internally and simply, you know, promote another in-house option, somebody like Cody Clemens or maybe Dalton Guthrie makes it as a defensive backfill with different playing time allocation. It looks a little bit crazy when you start thinking about all the different ways this can go in the immediate aftermath. Hoskins is going to go on the 60-day injured list. That frees up a 40-man spot. Does that mean Scott Kingery is back in the mix? All of this can get wild if you think about it for too long. So Matt, what does it seem like the team's plan is in the near term to try and address this? Are they going to stay strictly internal, or is there a chance they could look externally to supplement this team?
So I think Thursday night into Friday morning, a lot of it was the highest in the front office trying to gather and try to like play it out, right? And then Friday morning was a lot of them, it sounds like, just in talking to people, reaching out to other evaluators in the organization, analysts, scouts, and saying, it's almost like the, I love this, it's like an overused probably a comparison or metaphor, but like the scene in Apollo 13 where like, you know, they have all the equipment in the box and, you know, this is what they have up in the ship, and they dump it on the table and it's like, we have to get this square peg into this round hole, essentially. Yeah. And I kind of think that's like, they went to their guys this morning who were like, this is what we think. This is what we got. Give us ideas. Mm. And I think today they talked a lot of it through. We're recording this on Friday night. And, you know, you got a couple days here. And especially Friday was an active day. A lot of teams making some decisions on players, you know, on guys in camp who made or didn't make their teams. And, you know, potentially some guys becoming available. And, you know, you trust your scouts and your analysts and your organization to know, you know, who might be making a team, who might not be making a team, who might become available, who is available. And, you know, you want that knowledge so that if something catastrophic or unthinkable happens like this, that you can move on a dime. And that's why you have these people in your organization to keep tabs on everybody else. And so I think they've been entertaining a lot of different ideas. Look, like, I think they're going to acquire someone. And the way I look at it is, I think you try to travel the path of least resistance here. To me, that means keeping Boehm at third for the majority of time.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people have kicked around the idea of like Boehm bouncing between third and first, maybe even Boehm spending, you know, majority of time at first. I wouldn't rule that out for like later in the season. I think right now they want to see what Hall does, what Derek Hall does with, you know, some semi-regular playing time at first base against right-handed pitching. By keeping Boehm at third, like, you just, first of all, he's probably gonna DH a little bit too, so like you have probably that other part of the equation too. I mean, remember, before the Hoskins injury, you know, one of these so-called bench players was going to have to be in the lineup every day because you have this, you know, rotating DH or you know, situation until Bryce Harper returns. So by keeping Boehm at third, you at least free yourself up against lefties for Edmundo Sosa to either play center or second or left field if Kyle Schwarber's DHing. I just think you want to keep Sosa as kind of like your catch-all, your move around against lefties. Mm-hmm. He can play a different spot. And to me, to handle that at first, like, you go right now, like, if you do want to see Hall, and I do think they do, you go look for a right-handed platoon partner to pair with Hall.
It's interesting because there's no shortage of candidates, I guess, that you could toss out there, because
there's first fewer than fairly I would have thought, because but right-handed hitting first baseman, you're like, oh, there should be a bunch of these guys like to pick from. I've tried to go through a lot of rosters, and I've talked to a lot of people around the sport today, people from other teams, people from the Phillies, and like, there are some names.
Yeah, it's not as if there's a bounty. I don't want to give that impression. But there's more than, you know, two or three for what the Phillies are looking for. Granted, we're not looking for them to immediately go and trade for somebody who will replace Hoskins and then some. You know, we're not saying this is the time for some major deal to be struck where some real quality contributor who happens to still be stuck on a non-contending team somehow this close to opening day is available for trade at this moment when the Phillies have no leverage, and just it doesn't really line up that way. They're shopping in the so-called bargain bin because that's what they kind of would need to plug in right now. They have somebody who they want to see get the long end of a platoon in Derek Hall because he hit pretty well against right-handed pitching last year. Small sample and all that for sure, but he showed something and he's had a good spring.
He deserves a shot here.
I think so too. Sure. I mean, in these circumstances, especially, you know, like he was gonna get an opportunity, not as big as this one, obviously, but he was gonna get some looks regardless. And now he's thrust into the spotlight a little bit more. I think it's nice to hear that the team would be looking to make a quick move to supplement. You know, there were some names being talked about, you know, the likes of, you know, Luke Voit, who you mentioned, who might be making the Brewers in the wake of Keston Hira, who's another candidate, being told he's not going to make the Brewers, which is interesting and a swift fall from grace for him. And that's the kind of guy we're thinking about right now, right? You know, like Carlos Santana, who I think is with Pittsburgh right now.
I didn't even think about him. Wow.
The ironic thought of, you know, a Darren Ruff reunion because he's owed money.
That's the one.
Yes.
Yeah. That is the one that, like, I would love to see that. I don't know if it would be good, but I think it would be hilarious.
Hey, I mean, he didn't have a good year last year, but who knows? Maybe he can unlock a little something from a couple of years ago when he was in
Mets
San Francisco.
Fans, one of the weirdest twists of, like, Darren Ruff was, like, people were clamoring for years for the Phillies to bring him up, his Babe Ruff, and, like, you know, all this stuff. He became kind of this folk hero. And I never foresaw that Darren Ruff would end up becoming, you know, like, the bane of Mets fans' existence. Like, Mets fans hate Darren Ruff.
It's kind of wild.
What a career twist.
Yeah, he goes overseas for a few years and comes back a new man. No, I mean, I'm very happy for him. By all accounts, he's a great guy. He did have an absolutely brutal stretch with the Mets last year. Love to see that. Yeah. But you know, that's just the kind of guy we're talking about right now. That's the quality of hitter, of player that the Phillies would realistically be thinking about, because you have to consider the fit on the roster. For one, they would probably have to be right-handed or switch hitting. You would ideally like for them to be, you know, a little more adept than just standing there at first base, be able to pick it a little bit, although I'm sure that's not high on the priorities. You would think they wouldn't have to cost much for an acquisition right now when you couldn't, you know, talk about paying down salary too much, or if it's an established veteran uprooting them at this point. Like, that doesn't really happen right now at this point in the spring. All of this comes together to bring us to where we are and thinking about this really kind of tight list of characteristics. And it doesn't yield a whole lot. You kind of have to pick and choose or sift through this bin of, like, what makes the most sense? Are some of these guys going to get cut from their minor league deals or opt out? Is somebody like, we were talking just before we started recording, there's a thought that somebody like, you know, a Bobby Dalbec from Boston is a name being floated a little bit. Like, that's not a conventional thought, because he's, you know, not a rental, so you don't typically think about that. But also because they've been playing him all around the diamond, trying to get it to work. And the Phillies and Red Sox, with their recent history and the Noah Song thing, maybe being a little tense. I don't know. I probably play that up to be more than it actually is. Suffice to say, the Phillies have an interesting decision to make. It's not going to be a world-shaking decision. It's not going to be something that fundamentally alters the lineup necessarily. But it is important, because if you don't fully trust Derek Hall against left-handed pitching and you don't want to expose him to a lot of those looks, well, then you have to have some sort of reliable complement. All of the domino effects that come with moving Alec Bohm over, you know, I feel like we need to ride the hand while it's hot. He improved defensively, you know, as the year went on. You might as well keep playing him there to see if it sticks for another couple of years and you know, try and have him be a third baseman while he can, while everybody's outlook is still fairly grim. you know, taking reps away from third base at the moment doesn't really further that goal. You know, Kyle Schwarber can stand at first base, but like, what do you really expect out of him there?
He even tossed cold water on even standing at first base.
Oh, did he really? Well, there you go.
Yes. He was like, no, I will not do that. refuse to do it. It's just like, no, like it won't happen.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, it's better to be realistic and know ahead of time if you,
if you can make it work. As Charlie Manuel would say, know thyself.
Yeah. But that's the situation the Phillies are in now. It's not just that, you know, a lineup regular went down. And that's bad enough as it is. This is a guy who, you know, his handedness on top of his position and his spot in the lineup that he was set to occupy for the, you would assume, the majority of the season, the vast majority of the season, is now gone. Is gone. The most optimistic hope you can have is that if there is a playoff run, a deep playoff run again this year, that maybe the injury was not severe enough to have kept him out, and maybe he's a possible returnee in like mid to late October. That's it right now. And that's the, you know.
And you've hit on something here, Paul, that I think is important, is that we are going to focus on, well, like, how do you replace him at first base? But you touched on the handedness and the lineup, and more than anything, I mean, I think the onus on replacing Rhys Hoskins is going to fall to Nick Castellanos and Alec Bohm. They need right-handed power from both of those guys. And Bohm has showed an improved power stroke this spring. You know, has made some, you know, really strong adjustments, I think. And Castellanos has also made some adjustments. And, you know, Phillies could really use a big bounce back season from Nick Castellanos. And like, I think, I don't want to say he's like kind of an afterthought right now. He's not. I mean, like, he's making a lot of money, and people, you know, as soon as the season starts, will be focusing quite a bit on Castellanos. But I feel like he's kind of been written off. Like, I don't know. I mean, like, I don't think the expectations are real high. Don't you agree? Like, they're not high for Castellanos right now.
No, I 2022 lowered the bar so aggressively, you know, expectation wise, that if you look at a projected lineup now post Hoskins injury, if you look at somebody who's assembling these things outside of the top three, where presumably you'd have some combination of Turner, Schwarber, and Realmuto, probably it's going to change, I'm sure. But you think of those two as your top, or those three as your top three. If you plug Nick Castellanos in as a cleanup hitter in one of these mock lineups right now, you kind of wince a little bit, right? You look at his line from last year and you're like, whoa, sub 400 slug, precipitous drop off in power. Like, if you get the 2022 guy again, lineup depth took a massive hit. If you get something closer to the 21 guy, and hey, look, I still have faith in this guy. I've proclaimed it time and again. He's got the track record as a better hitter than what he showed last year, like, by far. Hopefully some of the more intangible things, like getting acclimated to the city and the new environment, other things that he's touched on in some of these stories that have come out over the winter, you know, where he's talked about his adjustment period and finding a way to have fun playing baseball again, you know, like when he got to the playoffs. Hopefully all of that contributes to something a little bit more positive, because he's so important right now. He is a little bit of an afterthought, but if he can produce closer to what's expected of him, you know, around the time he signed, that will help offset a lot. It will take a lot of weight. It will take a lot of weight off the rest of the lineup, because all of a sudden the Phillies are being challenged depth wise. They're being like seriously challenged all at once. It becomes really, really important that the remaining regular contributors, both in the rotation, especially, and at the top of the lineup, stay healthy. Because this team can't afford to take a whole lot of hits like this. They're down Hoskins for the year. They're down Harper for a few months. The rotation, you know, Ranger Suarez is a little bit nicked up. They've got other injuries. Things are getting a little tenuous right now. So for the guys who are healthy, yes, it's essential that they contribute. It's not just like an added on bonus like it would have been if the lineup was at full strength, like if Harper was healthy and if Hoskins had stayed healthy. No. It's totally different now. And if they can't, then there are going to be some more interesting conversations they might have to have as the summer creeps on.
Yeah, and also I just want to highlight this. I mean, like, let's not forget. I mean, last year, for example, Philly's shortstops hit .235 with a .291 on base and a .360 slug.
Yeah,
You know, it's going to be better. Like, it's going to be way better. So, like, you look around, you're like, where you're trying to compare them, you know, this lineup to, you know, the lineup that you know, they finished with, you know, last season. And you're looking for spots where, like, you think it'll be better or where they can, like, you know, try to comp and offset, you know, the loss of Hoskins. And obviously shortstop is one of those spots, and right field could be one of those spots. I mean, they really need it. And third base, you know, could be one of those spots. So, like, it still comes down a lot to, you know, the three young guys taking incremental steps forward, right? Bohm, Stott, Marsh, you know, they are important. Castellanos, more important than ever. And then Hall, you know, like, I think Paul, like, I could see them going, like, left, right, left, you know, like, I could see it going, like, against righties, I could see it going Turner, Schwarber, Realmuto, mm-hmm. Hall, Castellanos, Stott, Bohm, and then, I don't know, Cave, Marsh. So you'd go right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, all the way down until the 8,
stack
9
some
would be
lefties
left and
the bottom,
left.
Yeah.
It's not ideal. It's also, I don't know. Jake Cave.
It's not bad.
Jake Cave might be starting opening day. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Jake Cave is starting against Jacob DeGrom on opening day in Texas. Like, I could definitely see him in left field and Schwarber DHing.
And he joins the Cedric Hunter All-Stars in that case.
Oh, yes. Yes.
All right. So look, the outlook isn't fantastic right now. You know, this is a significant injury.
Well, how much does this downgrade? Like, so, you know, Vegas, I think they're at about 89.5, and I think it's gone down to like 88.5 or 87.5, somewhere in that vicinity. How much do you downgrade? Like, what? How does this downgrade your outlook on, like, this, you know, the their prospects as a whole?
Well, it hurts more than I think it will practically affect them, and I don't think the practical effect is going to be all that small. It would be great if they picked the right move to supplement it, whatever that move ends up being, whoever they end up trading for or claiming on, where whatever that move ends up being could go a long way to, on the field, objectively in the win column, offsetting what you lose with Hoskins going down. You're not going to fully replace him, at least not with whatever move is coming in the next couple of days. You just can't expect that. It really just, it'll take a little bit of time for me as a huge Hoskins guy to really just fully come to grips with, yeah, I'm not going to see him this year. This might be it. That might be the last time we've seen him in a Phillies uniform. And that part kind of, like, the fan part of it kind of sucks to deal with that and to have that sort of hanging over. Now, as with a lot of things, winning will help. Winning is good medicine, but it's going to take a little bit. You know, you just got to put more faith in the front office that they make that right move and that the wins pile up, that they don't fall too far behind while they wait for Harper to come back.
We haven't talked much about the fact that, like, their schedule is kind of soft in April. Like, they do have,
it's a,
like,
huge help.
I think it's 16 straight without an off day in the middle there. But, like, mm-hmm. you've got 7 games against the Reds, 4 against the Rockies, 3 against the Marlins, mm-hmm. White Sox. I don't know. Do you think the White Sox are going to be good?
I kind of want the White Sox to be better. They're sort of like my unofficial AL team. I've wanted the White Sox to be
I want the White
good.
Sox to be better because James Fegan, who writes, right. who writes about the White Sox for The Athletic, is one of my favorite writers. He's really good. You should check him out. But yes, I always enjoy reading his White Sox stuff. And we were nerding out today. He was texting me because an old friend, Paul, is going to make the Yankees bullpen. A former, I don't think he ever pitched for the Phillies, but he was a Phillies. He was a guy that you probably had a crush on. At one point.
Really?
Jimmy Cordero? Really? You remember him?
Jimmy Cordero! Oh, wasn't he involved in one of the Ben Revere trades forever ago?
Yeah. He's going to Toronto, make, maybe? He pitched in the big leagues for the White Sox, and now he's been in camp with the Yankees this spring, and he made the Yankees.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, good for him. Yeah, I remember being intrigued by him. Yes, I'm looking up his page now. July 2015. Jimmy Cordero and Alberto Tirado for Ben Revere.
Alberto Tirado was on the 40-man roster for like 3 months.
He was. Yeah. That's good for him, man. It's funny the names you see coming out of some of these spring training.
Yeah, Jay Reese Familia got released.
Yeah, he got the boot. Kyle Gibson got the opening day start nod for Baltimore. God. You know, like it's the Wild West out there, man.
It's quite a thing.
Anyway, Phillies, yes. The early schedule helps. You know, you were running through it. Reds for a couple of series, Marlins, White Sox, if they're not fully up to speed, we're fully realizing their potential, whatever. Rockies, who knows what the Rockies are going to be. There's a chance, hopefully, for them to bank some wins in the middle of the month. Really, it'll just be a little bit more important this year. It was already important with how good you were expecting the Mets to be. And the Braves, I don't want to believe in the Braves, but
they have to be happy that they don't face the Mets or the Braves until May 25th.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think Harper will be back by then. I guess maybe he could be, you know, by May 25th. You know, you're hoping that, you know, you've sorted some things out and, you know, how it was crazy, right? I mean, how they faced the Mets like 12 times, you know, like the first 6 weeks last year. And it's a really bad time for the Phillies to be playing the Mets. And
really,
like,
was,
you know, it was a huge difference in how the season record looked.
Yeah, no, it really hurt him. I know they went like, what, 3 months between series, something like that. That was a weird schedule. It's going to be weird this year too, with the balance. Anyway, all right, let's put a bow on this. Let's wrap it up. Let's summarize what's going on here. So Rhys Hoskins, he's going to get a second opinion on his tear, but he's out for the year. He's going to need surgery. There's a far off chance that maybe he could return in mid to late October if all goes well and the Phillies have a deep playoff run. Maybe. Can't count on him really doing anything. In the immediate term, Darrick Hall is now your likely opening day first baseman, somebody who's going to see a large share of the time against right-handed pitching. What remains to be determined, and Matt, what you've said may be addressed within the next couple of days before opening day, is what the right-handed or switch hitting complement to Darrick Hall might be in that corner spot and what that might look like. Don't really know too much about that yet. Sounds like things are still very early, obviously, as this just happened yesterday. It was only, you know, 30 hours ago, something like that. A lot in flux, but right now it seems like there is a good chance, I won't say will be, but a good chance that the Phillies will make a move to address Hoskins' absence, and it will likely be external. Does that sound about accurate? Did I miss anything?
Yeah, and the one thing I want to say is that, like, I don't think even if they do make a move, again, we were talking about some of these names, it's not going to be a big move, and I do think there's good reason behind that. It's like, number one, teams aren't looking to make big moves right now, like other teams, you know what I mean? Like, another team is not, like, you know, people want to ask me about Christian Walker, and guess what? Like, the Diamondbacks aren't going to trade him right now.
The Diamondbacks want to win right now.
Correct. And come July, if things haven't gone well for them, and the Phillies still feel like they have a need, then I mean, like, Christian Walker might be like a guy that they talk about. But I do think there's one other element to this that, like, I wanted to get to really, really quick, is that the reason why you kind of do the path of least resistance here, you find like just a suitable right-handed platoon bat for Hall, is that you don't want to close doors. Like, you don't want to go get a guy right now who you're like, we're committed to him, we're paying him a lot of money, we're going to put him at first base no matter what.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting scenarios that you want to keep open to me is the Scott Kingery situation, right? Like, I don't think Kingery's going to make the team, but I also think that people who have seen him this spring are optimistic, are encouraged. And so, like, let's say he goes to AAA and keeps doing what he's been doing and does even better, let's say. And, you know, is it far-fetched to think that sometime in the summer that, like, Scott Kingery is playing third base on a regular basis and Alec Bohm is playing first base on a regular basis? Like, I don't know. Like, I could see that. I could totally see that. And you don't want to close. You don't want to go out and get somebody that you're committed to close the door on that. If you play the path of least resistance now, you get a guy to chip in. You see how these other scenarios unfold. If nothing works and you need to go get somebody in July, you go get somebody in July.
Yeah. It feels like the first part of potentially, you know, two parts. You have this move, whatever it ends up being, however it ends up taking place. And then you have the usual wait and see and evaluate how things go and what you have come July. And it really brings that health part back into focus too, because you want everybody, like everybody, to stay healthy, obviously. But if you have too many holes popping up from guys going down, or you have a number of dudes populating the injured list in the middle of the summer, you don't have an unlimited farm to repopulate things from. And maybe this isn't the team to go all out. Well, it should be the team to go all out for, but if you have too many things to address, how do you balance it? So it's, there's a lot of stuff to keep an eye out on. You mentioned not closing a door in certain situations. That's another good reason why it should be a low stakes move to address the Hoskins thing right now. No panic trades, hang in there, wait and see both the state of your own team as well as the competitive landscape when July comes around. If you need to readdress something, well, then you probably haven't really dealt from your biggest parts of your prospect capital, if that's where you want to go, you know, from this move into July, on and on and on. Going to be small to start relatively. Hopefully it works. Hopefully it's a patchwork situation that keeps them in there. And then you just, you see what happens in July. I really, it feels like it could be an interesting July based on nothing other than a hunch. You know, it is. I have, you know, I have multiple tinfoil theories, both fun and not so fun, especially in the wake of this Hoskins stuff. There's a number of ways this team could go. You know, they're in it to win it, and they're probably not going to stand pat regardless of what they look like. But they got to get there first. And this, the first steps of getting there is finding out who they can use to try and replace a little bit of Reese Hoskins. Oh, Reese, I already miss you, buddy. Oh, anyway, just to wrap up on a slightly less sour note, hopefully. Matt, you just recently published a piece on the immediate roster aftermath on The Athletic. This was just, I believe, a couple hours ago. We have that folks can go check out. Is there anything else coming in the lead up to opening day you might want to let us know about?
Stuff.
Yeah.
That's it.
I know. Some I just asked you about this a couple days
just
ago.
Because I know, like I said, I teased like a couple different things, and like, you know, Reese Hoskins tearing his ACL has just like rearranged a few plans here. But yeah, in the days leading up to opening day, you can expect some fun stuff at The Athletic. That's all I'll say.
Reese, if you listen, come on. We'd love to talk to you. We'd love to talk it out.
Maybe get him on.
Yeah, that'd be
He's
nice.
Gonna have a lot of time.
Yeah. Right. Oh boy.
Yeah,
I just got a little sad again. All right, let's wrap this up. Thanks everybody for listening. Sorry that I feel bad that this took some air out of what was otherwise an incredibly positive spring. Well, got a couple of days left. Gonna wrap it up. Hopefully everybody else stays healthy, and then we look forward to opening night. Aaron Nola getting the ball against Jacob DeGrom, who will be wearing red and blue and white as opposed
crazy
to orange and blue for the first time.
I'm excited to see that place sold out. Like, we were there last year. It's a big place. It's a cool place. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see what it's like packed. It should be fun.
It should be great. I am trying to build myself up to get back to being excited. Baseball's around the corner. We're less than a week away. Trying to tell myself it feels good. We'll get to it. For now, a couple days left in the spring. Enjoy what's left. If you can, take in what you can. Matt and I will be back with you with a season preview sometime in the middle of next week. Stay posted to all the wonderful usual channels, Phillies Therapy on Twitter. And we'll catch you when we catch you. For Matt, I am Paul. We'll see you in a bit.